Okay, the Hoosier Environmental Council. Where are you?
Good morning, and may it please the court, I'm Jared Thompson representing the Hoosier Environmental Council and Citizens for Appropriate Rural Roads. In the Clean Water Act, Congress determined that aquatic resources are especially valuable.
Let me ask you a question. Did you ask for a preliminary injunction?
We did not, Your Honor.
You want to rip up this highway. May not be the tech. It's not tech. I agree with you. Not technically moot because you can always rip up the highway. But surely you can't be permitted to rip up the highway when you didn't ask for a preliminary injunction.
Your Honor, certainly ripping up the highway is not likely relief at this point, but there's still effective injunctive relief.
When you say not likely, I think it's unthinkable.
Perhaps it's unthinkable, but...
So let's talk about the other forms of relief you might...
So effective injunctive relief in this case could easily involve additional mitigation around the Section 3 highway. The standing declarants that we submitted noted harms like lost wildlife habitat, lost water quality, lost flood protection.
Okay, so what are you going to do about that? What are you going to do about the lost wildlife? You're not bringing them back to life, right? It's not going to be resurrection of the squirrels and birds and so on.
Well, Your Honor, restoring wetlands in the Section 3 area would bring back wildlife. It would restore the habitat.
Well, how do you do that? You've got the four-lane highway with its six, intersections. Now, what concretely do you think could be done to restore the wetlands and the animals and so on?
Well, Your Honor, it would be mitigation. It wouldn't be directly repairing the wetlands that were destroyed by the highway.
Yeah, just be concrete. What would it be?
It would be things like building a new wetland next to the highway, for example.
Why do you build a wetlands? I don't understand.
It's done regularly in compensatory mitigation, Your Honor, where basically you dig out an area so that it's below the water table and add vegetation. You monitor it over time to ensure that the plants are growing correctly and that it turns into a wetland.
And on the seventh day, you rest.
So what would this cost?
I don't know, Your Honor.
Doesn't some of that happen naturally once the wetland is filled to allow for the development of the road?
Your Honor, once the wetland is filled, it loses all the benefits of having a wetland there. So, no, this wouldn't happen naturally unless you did some additional mitigation to repair the wetlands, to create new ones to counteract the fact that we lost other ones.
So how much would it cost?
I don't have a specific cost estimate, Your Honor.
Well, generally.
I honestly do not know.
Well, I don't understand. When you ask for these remediations and so on, you don't have any idea what it costs?
Well, Your Honor, here, the first...
You're not going to be paying for it.
Your Honor, this is a highway...
Why do you ask for a preliminary injunction?
Your Honor, I perhaps we should have, in retrospect.
Well, perhaps you should have. Of course you should have. You know this highway is being built. It's a big project. And...
Your Honor, we knew...
Why don't you ask for a preliminary injunction?
Your Honor, when we brought this appeal,
you're imposing, who knows, tens of millions of dollars if you win? You think that's a... I don't get that.
Well, Your Honor, this is a highway that's proceeding in six segments. Only three of them have been constructed so far, and the legal errors that we've identified are recurring each time the Army Corps issues a new permit for each successive segment. So not only is there effective relief available for Section 3 in the form of the mitigation that we discussed, but this is also an issue that is just coming up again and again. And this was the first permit that was issued, the first individual permit that was issued for any section of Interstate 69. So this is the appropriate case to decide these issues and decide whether the Corps conducted the correct analyses when it granted these permits. The Corps, in our view, made two mistakes when it granted the Section 3 permit. First, it failed to consider adequately whether there are less damaging, practicable alternatives to the overall highway corridor. And second,
well, you don't want the highway at all. You want them to use the old highway.
Well, Your Honor, we think that
the one that runs through Terre Haute, is that?
That's correct, Your Honor. But it would be a new highway. US 41 from Evansville up to Terre Haute is not currently an interstate grade highway. It would have to be widened and expanded and improved to meet the standards for an interstate highway. And that's what we're suggesting they do. It would be an option that costs about half as much and that has much, much less environmental impact. And
but it doesn't accomplish the purposes of the project.
Well, Your Honor, it does, in our view, it does accomplish the purposes of the project. It would complete I-69 between Evansville and Indianapolis. It would provide benefits to residents of southwest Indiana.
But the route is bad. It doesn't connect Bloomington.
Your Honor, there's no requirement that the route include Bloomington.
Was the goal of the project, though.
No, Your Honor. Nowhere in the project does it say that the goal is to connect Bloomington.
It's a broader statement of the project goals to improve the transportation network in that part of the state, but there's significant population in Bloomington that they were trying to link between Indianapolis and Evansville, and going through Terre Haute takes it way out of the way.
Yes, Your Honor. The different routes affect different populations, obviously. However, there's no requirement in the purposes for I-69, and it says this explicitly in the Tier 1 Final Environmental Impact Statement for I-69, that it doesn't have to go through Bloomington. So in considering whether or not the highway meets its purposes, certainly they consider which populations are...
How do you balance? I mean, clearly this I-69 is a better route from a transportation standpoint. So how do you balance the gains from more efficient transportation against the costs and loss of wetlands and so on?
Well, Your Honor, the Corps is instructed by the Clean Water Act regulations to balance those values by...
That's my question. How do you do it?
So they're supposed to consider the cost?
All right. So when they... it doesn't do much to consider. How do you weigh these things?
Your Honor, in the end, it's some sort of a balancing test.
I know, but what are you balancing?
You're balancing... The practicable means you're balancing the cost, the logistics...
Okay, so what are the costs and benefits, right? Has this been done?
Your Honor, the Federal Highway Administration has considered this, but the Federal Highway Administration is not empowered by the Clean Water Act to determine whether or not an alternative is acceptable.
It's a pure cost-benefit analysis, you're saying?
No, Your Honor, it's not a numerical...
You should say it's a subject near and dear to the court, but go ahead.
Your Honor, it's not a numerical cost-benefit analysis where they have to add up the certain costs and add up the benefits and compare the two directly against each other. The alternatives analysis is...
So it's totally subjective?
No, Your Honor. The Clean Water Act regulations require the Corps to consider four factors. They have to consider cost, logistics, technology, and the overall project purpose. And if an alternative meets the project purpose and is capable and available of being done, then among those alternatives, they can only grant permits to the alternative that has the least environmental damage. So the problem here is that the Army Corps has never considered the question of which corridor is practicable. They've just assumed that the correct corridor was chosen.
There are alternatives, and one is better from a transportation standpoint. And the question is, how do you weigh the transportation advantages, faster commuting and what have you, against the loss of wetlands?
Well, Your Honor, under the Clean Water Act, that's not what you weigh against each other. The first question is it practical?
I don't understand. Then you wouldn't have any highways.
No, Your Honor. The Clean Water Act requires that you assess the alternatives to see if they're practicable. So it has to meet the project purpose. It has to provide a highway in this case. But the Army Corps has
to...
Well,
not a highway that runs through Vancouver, right?
No, Your Honor. A highway that connects Evansville and Indianapolis.
No, I know, but a highway that ran through Vancouver would connect Evansville and Indianapolis. Just be very indirect. Now, what weight is given to that?
Your Honor, the analysis...
Just answer my question. What weight is given to increased length because you're locating the highway so that it doesn't go through any wetlands?
Well, I think that concerns both the cost and the logistical aspects of the definition of practicable under the Clean Water Act. So if you're going that far out of the way, it would cost a lot more, and it would be logistically much more difficult to build. Those would be valid considerations for ruling out an alternative that went through Vancouver. But in this case, we're looking at a highway alternative that only adds about 10 to 15 minutes to the travel time. It's only about 12 miles longer. It's a much narrower range of alternative corridors that we're talking about here. And we believe that any of them could have been practicable under the Clean Water Act for purposes of fulfilling the need for I-69.
Okay, so you say 10 to 15 minutes. Now, what's on the other side? How many wetlands were destroyed? How many acres?
Your Honor, the alternative 3C, which is the one that was chosen, was estimated to destroy about 75 acres of wetlands and cross 127 streams. By contrast, the alternative 1 that would use the existing highway corridor for I-70 and the existing U.S. Route 41 would destroy about half as many wetlands, 22 to 40 acres of wetlands. It only crosses 65 to 72 streams, so far fewer streams crossed. The overall impacts are just much, much less.
Mm-hmm. How many people use this this route?
I don't know, Your Honor. I believe there are traffic projections in the final environmental impact statement. That
10 to 15 minutes doesn't sound like much, but what if you multiply it by 10,000 people?
Yes, Your Honor, and that is what they did in their analysis, and that's part of how they justified the selection of a 3C corridor. Right. But the problem here is that the corridor was chosen by the Federal Highway Administration, which doesn't have the authority to enforce the Clean Water Act.
Yeah, but at least we know that we know what the the Federal Highway Authority and the Indiana Department of Transportation presumably are just interested in transportation efficiency and minimizing commuting time and accidents and all that stuff. Okay. So they make that determination. So can't the Corps of Engineers accept that? The experts have told the Corps what the transportation advantages are, and then the Corps balances that against the damage to the wetlands and the, you know, animals and so on. Why isn't that the sensible way?
Your Honor, the Corps can use the information developed by the Federal Highway Administration, but it has to make an independent determination.
Well, that doesn't make sense. What does the Corps of Engineers know about highways, right?
The issue is that the Corps of Engineers knows about wetlands in the Clean Water Act.
You answer my question. What does the Corps of Engineers know about highways?
Your Honor,
does it have a highway staff?
I don't know, Your Honor. But in the,
the Corps of Engineers has any interest in highways. So they take the information that IDOT and the Federal Highway Administration provide, and they balance that against the wetland loss. Why isn't that a sensible division of responsibility? Do you want every federal agency to redo the analysis of every other federal agency?
No, Your Honor, it's not a question of them redoing the analysis, but the question is whether the overall corridor is practicable under the Clean Water Act, and that's a determination that only the Army Corps of Engineers can make, and they never made it in this case.
You admit that the advantages of the transportation in terms of saving people's time deserves consideration.
It's a fact.
So why isn't the Corps of Engineers entitled to take what the experts in transportation say and say to itself, all right, that's what we know about the transportation benefits. Now, here's what will happen if we use their preferred route. We'll lose twice as many acres of wetlands.
Your Honor.
Then they'll say, well, that's not too much.
Your Honor, the Corps has to the courts have been clear that the Corps' job is not to decide which is better among the practicable alternatives. If an alternative is practicable, the Corps can only issue permits for the alternative that has the least environmental damage, and the Corps has simply never made that determination in this case. I see that I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Oakley?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Robert Oakley. I'm here from the Department of Justice on behalf of the Corps of Engineers. I'm splitting my time with Mr. Furlow, who's here on behalf of the Indiana Department of Transportation, or NDOT. I'll speak for the first 10 minutes, and he'll use the remaining five. I think it's important to remember that the permit here was for Section 3, and that, as the District Court noted and we quoted in the opinion, from his opinion in our brief, HEC or Hoosier had no objections in terms of the alternatives analysis within Section 3. So, for example, the question of mitigation came up with the court. No claim has been made in this case that the mitigation for Section 3, which replaces wetlands roughly on a ratio of 3 to 1 or 2.5 to 1 on an acreage basis, is inadequate. So they did not come in and say, well, wait, you messed up on your permit for Section 3. You should have had more mitigation for Section 3. Their claim is really much broader. Their claim is, no, regardless of what you did for Section 3, you were wrong because you did not, at an earlier stage or at some stage, revisit Federal Highways and NDOT's determination of which among either 5 in the final EIS alternatives or 12 at the draft EIS stage, which of those alternatives had the least impact on wetlands. And the Corps made clear in two letters, which again we cite in our brief. I know one of them appears at the excerpt of record or appendix at 148, that it couldn't do this and it wasn't going to make these corridor-wide determinations. It needed specific information. And the reason it needed specific information is that these corridors were roughly 2,000 feet and this is at the Tier 1 stage, 2,000 feet in area from one side to the other. And to judge impacts to wetlands, you really need final design plans. They said this twice in official correspondence. And so the question that was asked of counsel for Hoosier, well, how many wetlands are going to be affected by Alternative 1 versus Alternative 3C, is really, the answer is somewhat speculative because you're looking at it at a Tier 1 stage. So as when you get to Tier 2 and you're looking at the specific design plans, when you know exactly where that highway is going to go, that's when you really know the volume of wetlands that would be affected by the development of this highway. After all, wetlands can be fairly small in area, and so it may be that moving the highway within that 2,000-foot corridor just slightly evades any impact to a particular wetland. But again, there has been no challenge to the Section 3 analysis. There has been no demonstration of any duty to make this corridor-wide determination, which it's impossible to even see how the Corps could have done it.
Couldn't the Corps at Tier 2, knowing where I-69 was going, and of course they know the alternative, couldn't they at that point opine on the environmental impact of the alternative corridors?
They could not, because they have final design information for the first three sections, and then Section 4 has been addressed, but they don't have for 5 or 6. There was never final design information developed for the alternatives that were rejected. They never were carried forth beyond the 2,000-foot corridor approximation. So they would lack the information. They would need to go back and have five or 12 different highways designed to make that analysis. Now, it's important to note that
I thought the Corps in its 404 permit decision with respect to Section 3 did, in fact, incorporate the conclusions of the environmental, or at least the information contained and conclusions to the extent that there were some in the environmental impact statement that was done by the transportation agencies at the Tier 1 level.
That is correct, because the Corps noted that its jurisdiction is limited to waters of the United States and the placement of fill in waters of the United States, and its jurisdiction does not extend to the design of highways.
Right.
And Federal Highways and NDOT had looked at more than just traffic efficiency here. They had, in their environmental impact statement, looked at all sorts of environmental impacts that would result from the construction of this highway, including impacts to wetlands.
Right.
And the Corps said in its decision document for Section 3, look, we're limiting our jurisdiction as we to simply the matters before us, the wetlands within Section 3, and we find that that's okay. As for broader impacts, we're not in the business of designing highways, and we're relying on the Tier 1 EIS done by Federal Highways and NDOT.
And the regulations encourage that, as I understand
it. That is true, in that it's foolish for the government to overlap or reinvent the wheel here, which they would have done, because while we only provided the court with selected excerpts from that EIS, I can tell the court from looking at it, it's a very lengthy, and I'm talking about the Tier 1 EIS, it's a very lengthy document, and it, again, addresses many impacts. There are numerous technical appendices to it. So this has all been, this information has been out there for years. The decision was made by Federal Highways and NDOT on Alternative 3C all the way back in 2004.
Well, if you wanted, if environmental group wanted to challenge I-69 and say that the, you know, the old route is superior on environmental grounds, where do they go? They wouldn't want to go to the Highway Administration. Can they go to EPA, or what do you do?
They would need to find something wrong with the environmental impact statement. If they could show that the Corps didn't address some issue, I'm sorry, I said misspoke when I said the Corps. If they saw that Federal Highways and NDOT had not adequately addressed some issue, or if the conclusions they reached were inconsistent with the administrative record, they could have the decision overturned, sent back for further environmental study.
So there are environmental impact statements about the highway?
There, yes, at great length.
Who would overturn it?
Who would overturn it? A district court or this court?
That is to say they have to start litigation in order to overturn it.
They would start litigation. In fact, there was some litigation over the Tier 1 EIS, primarily focused on whether this tiering process, which the tiering process was that they were going to look at the just general corridor selection at Tier 1, and then only in Tier 2 would they break it up in segments and give you final design information. So there was this broad environmental review by Federal Highways NDOT. In part, it was challenged by these plaintiffs, and they could have challenged on other grounds as well. I think I may be eating into Mr. Furlow's time.
Not yet, but you're getting close.
Well, I'll just give it to Mr. Furlow, unless the court has a question for the court.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Oakley. Yeah, Mr. Furlow?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I just wanted to try to point out a few references in the record that address the to the extent the Corps needed to look at the overall corridor structure and whether or not the corridor that was selected in Tier 1 was sufficient. I believe if you looked in the record and looked at excerpt of record on page 342-43, in their permit decision, the Corps said, in light of having, which I think the fair reading of that is, they've looked at all of this, and we know they've looked at all of this because it's all in the administrative record for this case. They say, and this is on page 37 of my brief, in light of the detailed alternative analysis of the alternative corridors in the Interstate I-69 project between Evansville and Indianapolis, and the selection of the least environmentally damaging alternative, they're going to limit their review in Section 3 to the alternatives within that 25-mile stretch of highway, the actual project that they had in front of them. The fact is that we've had at least four EISs produced for the project. There's been an EIS for the Tier 1, which considered the entire 149-mile length of the corridors and considered 12 different corridors, including the alternative that the plaintiffs and the appellants have been trying to convince everyone should be built. And in fact, if you looked in the record, and we cite in our brief, there's been a tremendous amount of analysis and comparison of the benefits and detriments of the selected alternative, which is known as Corridor 3C, and the alternative that goes through Terre Haute that the plaintiffs are looking at.
But all that analysis has been done by the transportation agencies.
It's been done, yes, Your Honor. It's been done by the transportation agencies, but the Corps of Engineers was involved. If you, on page 46 of our brief, we quote from a letter found at excerpt of record 142 of the Corps issuing a comment on the final EIS, where they note that they've looked at, and what it's known in the record as Appendix DD of the final EIS, which is Federal Highways and NDOT's analysis of the LEDPA, the least environmentally damaging alternative, for 404 purposes, not making the decision for the Corps, but providing the analysis. And the letter from the Corps says that they had gotten a copy of the draft appendix containing that analysis. And here the important part is, my staff reviewed the draft and provided comments which expressed our satisfaction that an analysis of consistency with Section 404B1 guidelines had been incorporated into the FEIS. Not that the Corps made that decision, but they reviewed it, they commented on it, they knew what was happening. So in the context of this tiered process.
So has the Corps signed off on this 3C corridor?
Well, Your Honor, I believe...
I think that's the complaint here, is that
they have not, because they have not been presented with an application. They've been not asked to act on the entire corridor.
They act on a permit-by-permit basis.
That's right. But what they said in their permit decision, which I pointed out earlier, was in light of all of that analysis, which means that, I think, that they, no one knows for sure, because you can't get into the minds of the actual author of these documents, but reading the text, they say, in light of that analysis that was in the Tier 1 process, they're now going to turn to what's in the application and look at the alternatives within the 25-mile section, part of alternative of Section 3.
Right. Is that language enough to support a conclusion that the Corps has, by virtue of incorporating the Tier 1 environmental impact statements by reference, has authorized the use of this 3C corridor?
Well, Your Honor,
to the relevant standards that the Corps is supposed to be applying?
That's a great question, because I think it gets one of the core issues here is whether or not the Corps actually even has an obligation to look at the corridor wide selection process itself. In doing Tier 1, the Corps had announced to us that they weren't going to permit us at Tier 1. We had wanted to be permitted at Tier 1. They said, no, we're going to do it at Tier 2. They knew that Tier 2 was going to be independent sections and would be smaller sections. They, the Corps, and EPA then asked us to include in our analysis a corridor-wide analysis of the LEDPA, the least environmentally damaging practicable alternative, which we did, which turned into that appendix that I cited earlier, Appendix DD, which the Corps reviewed and commented on. That was the extent, and that's the extent of the analysis of the corridor-wide benefits and detriments of the various alternatives.
You mentioned EPA, it was involved?
EPA was involved. And I point out in our brief, footnote 25 in our brief, EPA, in looking at the Section 3 permit, said this. They had no comments. They had no objections. They thought we had done a good job of minimizing and avoiding wetlands to the extent practicable.
And the Corps has the authority to limit the scope of its permits to smaller projects within a larger project, and so defer the ultimate decision until a later point in the process, if there's some independence or independent utility to the smaller portions of a larger project.
Yes, Your Honor, they do. They have definitions within their regulations, which they don't even need to rely upon here.
Right, so they can turn down your request for a global permit and say, we want to take it one step at a time, and that's what happened here.
And that's what happened here.
Independent utility finding, so we're going to find that somewhere in this record.
Well, the decision to turn the corridor into six sections of independent utility was made by Federal Highways in the 2003 record of decision, which is in the record, and those sections connect specific endpoints. Usually what we've done is we've connected either state routes or U.S. routes to each other, so that if for example, and this was actually an argument in the Tier 1 litigation that we had a colloquy with now Judge Hamilton on the court here, about what happens if the Corps, the question to me was roughly, you're taking quite a risk, aren't you, that the Corps could, at some point in time, deny a permit for one of these individual sections. And my response was generally, yes, we are. But we feel confident in the analysis that we've done that the Corps, when it comes to permitting the individual sections, will find a way to grant us the permit. The other point I wanted to make, and I see my time has run out, is that there are other 404 permits that have been granted for this project to get to the point of effective, you know, whether or not there's still effective relief. Section 1, which is a 13 or 16-mile stretch of highway, has a permit, has a 404 permit that's been granted. Statute of limitations has run. There's been no challenge to it. Section 2 has an individual permit and regional general permits. There's a challenge to the individual permit and to the regional general permits in that case. That case is on abeyance pending this court decision. Section 3 itself also has the 5 acres or so that was granted as a part of the individual permit, but also other wetland areas that have been filled pursuant to the regional general permits that the Corps verified were applicable to that project. So even if the court were to say there was an obligation to look at a broader corridor-wide selection, what you have here is a question of effective relief, because you have all of those other wetland areas that are not challenged that were filled pursuant to the authority of the regional general permits. I see my time is up. I'd be happy to answer more questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thompson?
Thank you. I'd just like to make a few quick points here. First, the corridor that was chosen under the National Environmental Policy Act, which is a purely procedural statute, and that decision is simply not controlling under the Clean Water Act. But this was the first permit issued by the Army Corps of Engineers, which is the agency that enforces the Clean Water Act. So this was the first chance to challenge the Army Corps' determination under the Clean Water Act. It's not enough that the NEPA process proceeded under Tier 1. Second, with regard to the independent utility finding, that's coming from
the environmental impact statements. They can be the basis for litigation.
Certainly, but there's no outcome-forcing provision in NEPA. In NEPA, they have to consider all the alternatives, but they can choose any of them if they think that, for example, the transportation benefits outweigh the environmental values. Under the Clean Water Act, among the alternatives that are practicable, that fulfill the project purpose, only the least environmentally damaging alternative can receive permits. And that's what was never considered in this case.
But the Corps can fold all that information into its permitting decisions without having to reinvent the wheel.
It certainly doesn't need to reinvent the wheel, no, Your Honor. It can rely on that information, but it has to verify it.
Verify it? What do you mean?
Well, for example, in the Utahns for Better Transportation case, the Corps was given cost estimates for an alternative highway alignment that the court found were unverified, were not reliable.
What do you mean by unverified?
It means that they haven't looked back and concluded that the information is actually reliable, that they can use that and be sure that it's
correct.
They
have to redo every cost estimate?
No, Your Honor, but they need to consider
that. Well, how do they determine reliability?
Well, for example, in this case, Your Honor, we've identified places where the consistency analysis that was done for comparing Alternatives 1 and Alternatives 3C relied on outdated data from the draft EIS instead of from the final EIS. We've identified places where it talked about problems with the Alternative 1 corridor, but never considered the corresponding problems from the Alternative 3C corridor. Those are the kinds of things that the Corps should identify and discuss.
The Corps of Engineers is a kind of reviewing court.
Well, Your Honor, there's many cases where the Corps second-guesses what agencies have done in the Utahns case.
They have agencies second-guessing what agencies do, preparatory to have the Corps second-guess, the second-guessing by the second agency.
How far are we up to, though?
Let me just ask you, are all the wetlands affected in this case? Are they all waters of the United States?
Yes, Your Honor. That hasn't been an issue throughout this case.
Are all wetlands waters of the United States?
No, Your Honor. As the Supreme Court found in Rapanos, there are certain lines of wetlands that are and are not within waters of the U.S.
Okay, well, thank you very much,
thank you.
Mr. Thompson, and thank you to Ms. Oakley and Mr. Furlow.